Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Now I'm joined in the studio by award-winning chef Mark Moriarty. Great to have you in, Mark.
Very much,
Lovely to see you. And we wanted to talk to you for a couple of reasons, but I feel, I know it's still summer and the weather's lovely, but there is that sense, maybe it's because they're going back to school soon, next week, that change is in the air and we need to start thinking about more autumnal foods. Do you feel a bit like that?
Yeah, people are starting to respond to my emails again, having been probably off for the last 4 weeks, which is a great sign. And this is the time of year I get excited about. I just like comfort food. I like braising things. I like rich food.
Get some of the barbecue, wouldn't you?
Yeah. And you know, the kind of the summery, when it's nice outside, sometimes I just want to sit on the couch in the evening and then it's really sunny outside and you're like, God, do I have to go out and do something or do I have to cook a salad again? So
can I not just watch a movie and eat stew?
No, I'm all ready for the stew season, which is coming up.
Yeah. And also it's good in terms of stretching food and using, you know, stewing beef or mince, isn't it? I mean, it can be more cost effective.
Yeah, so I do the Irish Times column at the weekend and I'm constantly sort of, I sit down every Monday and I write the 500 words and we put in the recipes and you're working ahead. And I'm always thinking, well, like, what do practically people need at certain times of the year? So obviously coming into September now and the weather getting a bit worse and kids going back to school and money getting tight potentially, it's always like, well, what sort of lessons can you take from the professional kitchen that we can apply at home? So any food that goes in the bin is a sin and it's money in the bin. So I'm always like, well, how do you go and do your shop on a Monday or Tuesday? Set out your list and make sure that come the end of the week, every scrap of food has been used. People are fed. The food is delicious. It's nutritious. But we're actually getting the most bang for our buck. And like all the things I do, it always comes down to successful recipes being based around mince, chicken, root vegetables, pastas, potatoes. That's generally what people have. But it's like, okay, well, how do we now come up with recipes that you can bulk up, that you can stick in a slow cooker or throw in the oven for a couple of hours for the day, where you're buying, say, I'm doing lasagna this week, so I bought 2 packets of stewing beef and 2 packets of mince, and I'm going to make a lasagna that would probably feed 15 people. We've only got 3 in our house, but I know that I can freeze 4 portions down, I can keep 4 portions for the next day, and I can have 3 or 4 portions on the night. So I'm getting 3 things out of the one job, in the same way we would do in a professional kitchen. And by buying in bulk, I'm able to save money. And then it's about just adding a few bits and bobs to bulk up our meals.
Yeah. I mean, most chefs I've spoken to, and I mean, you obviously come to mind because you're sitting in front of me and talk about waste, Kevin Dundon, Nevin Maguire. You're all horrified at how we waste food, you know, in our kitchens at home, because you just don't do that in a professional kitchen, do you?
It's slightly easier in a professional kitchen because you would have, say, if you're lucky, you're going to have 40 people a night coming in, the menu can change, and then you might have 15 staff who you have to feed as well. So it's easier if you've got leftover bits to turn it into something and make use of it. Not quite as easy at home if you've a family and a couple of kids, or if there's only 2 people in the house, or if you're living alone, it becomes a little bit more difficult. But what I always find in that scenario is I spend a lot of money on like Tupperware and containers, and I always make sure that one section of the freezer is ready to go to put stuff in, so I have space. So if it is a case that, you know what, I made too much spaghetti bolognese, I'm going to mix up some with some salad-y bits and put it away for tomorrow's lunch, and then I'm going to freeze 2 portions down, and then if I'm stuck next week I can just have it to pull out of the freezer. That's something you would do in the professional kitchen a lot.
I just don't like defrosted stuff.
Do you not?
No. I take it out and I go, I think I'm great putting it in and I feel really virtuous. Then when I take it out and I look at it when it's defrosted, I think I just can't eat that.
Well, certain things work. There's certain things that will always work. Like if you're making a braise or a stew or a chili con carne mix, or I don't know, like a chicken casserole mix, they're going to freeze down really well because by the time they defrost, they're going to be very, very similar. Whereas things like steaks or fresh chicken breasts or eggs don't really freeze and defrost. It's not going to work. So you can be clever in that. And I might say, if I've got a spaghetti bolognese mix that I've put in the freezer and I've got I know a couple of people coming over on Sunday morning for a brunch. I'll take that out. I'll add a load of chili powder and maybe cumin to it, and then I'll put it on toast with some poached eggs and turn it into something else, as opposed to having to go through the whole rigmarole on a Sunday morning of making chopping. Something from scratch.
Yeah, and there is that relatively new trend of chopping something up, not cooking it, putting it into a freezer bag, you know, and then taking it out, and so you don't have to go to all of that work. That's another way to do it. Which
I don't like that.
You don't like that?
I like having the job completely done as opposed to half doing it. I mean, it only takes a minute to chop up some veg, and you're kind of wasting plastic, first of all, and you're wasting space. But another trick I always have is, if I've got leftovers, that you might have a couple of roast potatoes or carrots left over on a Sunday, and I can't turn that into anything. What I'll do is I make this white soda bread mix. Mm-hmm. So what I do is I make a basic white soda bread. So you've got your flour in there, you've got your bread soda, which makes it rise, and I add a bit of buttermilk, salt, and some sugar. If you don't have buttermilk, you can do 50% milk, 50% yogurt. It will do exactly the same thing.
What about lemons and fresh milk?
Lemons and fresh milk will work, because what you need is you need liquid and you need acid to activate the bread soda, which creates the rise in the bread.
Mm-hmm.
But then what I'll do is I'll make it savoury. So I'll add a bit of salt in there. I'll throw in the leftover carrots, maybe the bit of leftover roast chicken off the carcass, mix it all together. I might add a few little chili flakes or some seeds if I have them in there as well. Bake it off, forget about it. And then during the week, I know if someone's come in and they're hungry, I can make a smaller amount of the protein on the plate, which is the expensive part, and add a slice of this leftover soda bread with
chicken
a
slab bread
of butter on it. Well, it can be anything. I know we've given the recipe and the guys are going to put it up.
No, it's there. It's up on the website now, rt.ie/todaycb.
But that's
Mark's soda bread.
That's a great way of, that's how you would in the restaurant. If the piece of fish is really expensive, I might, instead of giving 120 grams, I might give 100 grams portion of that. And then I might use all the bits and bobs from the end tail piece and mix it with potato and put it in a little breadcrumb and fry it and put that on top. And all of a sudden, I've bulked up the amount of food I'm serving without spending extra money.
Mm, it is a great way to do it. Do you bake a lot of bread?
I try to. We go through phases like everything at home. I randomly a few weeks ago had this big bucket at the back of the cupboard that was chocolate flavoured protein powder from a phase I was in earlier this summer.
I have that too, yeah, sitting there.
Well, it was sitting there and it had not been used because I did not go to the gym. But I was like, what am I going to do with this now? So I basically made a brown soda bread mix, and I had loads of random stuff in there, and I didn't weigh it out. I kind of just winged it in until I had the consistency that I know brown bread should be. But there was prune juice in there, there were chia seeds, there was this chocolate protein powder. I added some cocoa powder to give it a really nice colour, and then your wholemeal flours and all this. And I baked it off because I wanted to get it out of the store cupboard. And it was really, really nice.
Was it?
With the butter on top, it was like this sort of molassesy, really chocolatey, savoury sort of brown bread.
Mm-hmm.
And you toasted it in the toaster in the morning with a bit of butter on top, and it was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, so I mean, we shouldn't be scared of throwing things together either. I was making banana bread last night, and the recipe said 4 bananas, and I only had 2 that were sort of going off. And I put the 2 bananas in, and then I put in some chocolate, powder. It was chocolate powder, but it kind of had chunks of chocolate. And my daughter was saying, "What are you doing? That's not in the recipe. And you don't have enough bananas." But we went for it, and it was lovely.
Yeah, but if that's a classic example. I don't have 4 bananas, I have 2. It's like, okay, what, the 2 bananas I'm missing, what else is in the fridge that's similar to it? And it might be, I don't know, some overripe apples or a pear. You can still chop that up, mash it with a fork, and it kind of looks like banana. The flavour profile is the same, and all of a sudden it goes in and you get the product you want, because we're not all serving 40 guests who are paying 80,
you can get away
euro
with
for
it.
A restaurant. I mean, the idea is to feed people, keep them happy, make it nutritious and save a bit of money. So,
and has your home kitchen changed at all since you became a dad?
Yeah, the freezer is definitely full by my lovely wife, Grania, who makes all these purees and then freezes them down.
Yeah, that's a whole job and of itself.
And the steamer now never leaves the stove.
Countertop.
Yeah. We just leave it there permanently and throw veg in. First thing in the morning, get her up, get her fed, get the steamed veg on so it's ready for 11 o'clock. Listen, I buy the stuff and do a little bit, but Grania, my wife, is the powerhouse there, making it all work.
You know, that phase lasts for such a short period of time. It's like anything, isn't it? You feel like, oh, life has changed forever, but then your baby grows up. And
like, we had all these grand plans. We're going to make all these dinners. Like, after a month, it was like, don't have time for this. Going to buy the stuff, the puree stuff, and bulk it up and get it. Because most of the times you just laughs and throws it on the ground anyway, and
exactly.
The dog licks it up. So
it's about getting them used to different things and textures, and on you go. Now, questions coming in. I find it's much better freezing the sauce items like bolognese mix or shepherd's pie mix, curry sauce, and then cooking the fresh carbs, rice, pasta, couscous, of course, yeah, much tastier and fresher. Another one's to know, is there a trick to defrosting meat? My good quality mince is kind of wettish when it comes out of the freezer.
Yeah.
Should you unpack it? You know, if you're buying pre-packed mince.
Mm. No, don't. It's
just leave it.
Too much of a waste time. But if you're defrosting, what I do is once it comes out and it's a frozen block, put it on a plate with a paper towel or like a J cloth underneath, and then cover it again and defrost it. If you have the time, defrost it in the fridge overnight through the day. And what happens is the cloth underneath will absorb all the excess liquid that just naturally appears in ingredients when they defrost.
There you go. There's always a little trick, isn't there? Now, you're back with season two of the podcast, which is called Roasted.
Yep.
You cook for your guests. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So part of the... I'm no interviewer like you, Claire, but I'm starting to get used to it. But it's almost my icebreaker. Is it's a show about people, but the way to get insights into their life is through questions around food. So the opening thing I do before they even come into the studio, we email them and say, is there one ingredient or one dish that you're particularly loving at the moment? And then I take that information, make a dish, and when they sit down to do the interview, the dish is in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
can they eat it?
And they do eat it, yeah. And it's kind of awkward because you have this interview
talking
and then they're
and
stuffing their face. It's like, well, how am I going to fill the time? But for example, we did a guest this morning and it was key lime pie.
Oh, lovely.
Was
there.
And okay, and it was lovely and I hadn't made it since I was 14 in home ec, so we make it. But that opens a conversation of why key lime pie, and the reference was this guest was an actor.
Are we allowed to know who it is?
It's coming further down the line. I just need to make sure it edits up well. But he spent a lot of time in America as a fledgling actor and would go into these diners to practice for upcoming auditions, and the thing he always remembered was he'd never seen key lime pie was what was served in all the diner menus, big massive wedges of it. So all of a sudden you've taken food as the hook and you've got a real insight into a moment in their life, and that kicks off the conversation.
It's a great idea. So who have you got that you can tell us about?
So we've had some great ones this season. We've had Michael Healy-Ray is the first episode, which is out tomorrow.
What did he want to eat?
He wanted porridge.
But no.
It was interesting. We interviewed
porridge.
Him.
You've got award-winning chef Mark Moriarty, and Michael Healy-Ray asks for porridge.
Porridge. So, and you know what? He made it explicitly clear. His son looks after, saying Michael won't actually eat it because he gets up at 4:30 in the morning every morning. He actually drove up from Kerry that morning, and he eats
it's
at 5:00.
At 4:30. Yeah, go on. This is fascinating.
Eats the porridge at 5:00. Comes up, drives up for business of the day, but he won't eat it again until the evening. So they were making it explicitly clear that he won't actually eat the porridge.
He's doing intermittent fasting, whether he knows it or not.
But it's a fascinating insight. We've had, like, last season, Leo Varadkar wanted ice cream. Mm-hmm. So the first 4 minutes of the interview are him trying to guess the flavour of the ice cream, and this is the former Taoiseach of the... this season, then, we have the likes of Paul McGinley.
The golfer.
The golfer. We have Ellen Keane, the Paralympian.
What did Paul McGinley want to eat? What ingredient or food?
Ribeye on the bone, because he was just back from the USPGA and he'd had it in a restaurant in Charleston. So all of a sudden, I'm like... Okay, tell me about what happens. We see you on the TV doing the Sky Sports commentary, and then you've obviously gone to a restaurant and had this ribeye. Mm-hmm. Who are you with? Where did you go? Do people talk to you? What's the topic of conversation? What do you drink? So I'm not interested in what we all know these famous people do. It's like what goes on behind the scenes that
yes.
we don't know about.
So with the ribeye then, are you cooking that and serving that to him with all of the trimmings? Are you saying, here's your steak and it's a bit cold because I made it a couple of hours ago?
It's just the steak. It wasn't cold because I made it at home and brought it in because I haven't got the kitchen in the studio yet. But what I did was I knew he had connection to Donegal and his family, and he was very passionate about that. So I sourced the beef in Donegal and I was able to say, listen, we got this from a butcher in Ballybuffet. And then there's a whole insight into, okay, you grew up there and what were your... Ideally, I will get it to the point I'm opening a new studio later this year where we'll do private dining and restaurant nights. But hopefully for season three, I'll be able to invite a guest on and ask them for their three-course meal.
Oh, wow.
And what we'll do is we'll cook it for them as we interview them over the space of
I come in for that one?
We'll put you in for season three first.
I'd love that. So listen, you mentioned the new place, so restaurant nights, but not a restaurant.
Not a restaurant. So a lot of my business at the moment is around private dining, corporate dining, as well as my media work that you'll see, so yeah, the podcast, the TV, the cookbooks, and I do a lot of work with the likes of M&S and
you have your Irish Times thing as well.
Yeah, so loads going on.
But you don't seem to have a desire to go back into the restaurant business full time.
Yeah, because I've built this lovely little niche for myself of food media, but my skill is still cooking sort of high-end food, and it's what I've trained to do. So what we've done with the studio is it's a sort of HQ for all my business, where it will have between 12 and 24 seats, depending on what you want to do. We're going to open it on Friday nights as a restaurant, and then the rest of the week I'll have my private dining clients in, my corporate clients. But when you take the seats out, it also becomes a TV studio. We'll also have a built-in podcast studio, and we'll be able to create all our content, our photography, and all our online media, all in the one space, which I've been outsourcing for the last few years.
The 2025 way to be a chef, Mark.
Well, I've always tried to forge my own course in it, so we're continuing on that path.
Well, listen, Roasted with Mark Moriarty is out from tomorrow, isn't it? And the 20th of August on Spotify or Apple or YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. And Mark is on Instagram too, at Mark Moriarty1. Mark, it's always great to see you. Thanks
Likewise.
So much for coming in.